would like to welcome everybody to the April 28th board meeting for San Luis Coastal Unified School District. We've had to switch around a couple of seats because someone is leaving and going home. And we appreciate your patience because we got a little bit of a late start tonight. In closed session, the board met and discussed a matter involving real property, discussed labor negotiations, and tabled the third item, which was the evaluation of the superintendent, to a later closed session. So now we're back in open session, and I wanted to ask the remaining short or smaller group of board members if we're okay on the consensus or the order of business. It looks like we're good. Okay. And then next item, order of business, is the approval of the minutes. There's, I think, three. If anybody wants to start with the first once you've had a chance. I believe the first minutes for April 7th of 2009.
I move to approve the minutes for April 7th.
We have a motion by Mr. Angel, an amended motion. Okay, so we'll move on to the minutes of April 21st, and when someone's ready, they can make. Or do we? I think I missed one,
April
didn't
20th.
I? April 20th, and I was absent. So there's only three members tonight who can vote on it, so we may have to hold the minutes. Okay. So the minutes for April 20th have to be continued to the next board meeting, so there's a quorum of four or more.
I'll move approval of the minutes of April 21st.
Okay, moving on. Do we have a second?
Yes, I'll second.
Okay, we have a motion by Mark and a second by Catherine for the minutes of April 21st. Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Passes 4-0. There was no correspondence, from what I understand, at the time of the board meeting. And has there been any other correspondence or any later correspondence received? Okay, so we'll move on to public comment. This is the portion of the meeting that's, as is stated in the agenda, that if anyone from the public would like to...
Mr. Chair, we have one item just prior to public comment.
Oh, I'm sorry. Especially
okay.
Since it's your item. Thank you for pointing that out. We do have a presentation by Superintendent Dr. Valentine on the status of negotiations. Please,
very,
Dr. Valentine.
Very brief for those of you anxious for public comment. This item, the report on the status of negotiations, was placed on the agenda to allow for an update on negotiations in the event that no agreement was reached by this date, and so it was placed earlier. I'm pleased to report that we have reached a tentative agreement with the San Luis Coastal Teachers Association. The agreement includes a 3% salary increase for the current 08-09 school year. A second year agreement of a 3% increase is contingent upon property tax revenues increasing by at least 2.5%. Salary in the third year of the contract is open to negotiation, and this agreement is consistent with contracts for other employee groups. There are other contract changes which we won't detail here, but which are available. That said, there are a couple of points that I'd like to make as long as we've reserved this spot. And first, I want to thank SLCTA and its bargaining team for all the efforts they put into this negotiation. Their work resulted in contract changes which position us well both now and in the future to compete for the best and brightest candidates in our business. We certainly didn't agree on everything along the way, but when it counted, we were able to achieve a final agreement which embraced many of the interests of both parties, and I think the best interest of the district as a whole under the circumstances. The second comment I would like to make focuses on the process of negotiations. The issues are complex and defy a black and white characterization of each. the current system, which relies heavily upon sound bites and written missiles and media releases and one-sided rationales from either party, is inadequate for the intelligent processing of the issues by everyone. Regarding educational finance, it appears that things will get worse before they get better in our business, and difficult decisions lie ahead. A fractured education community depleted by infighting will not meet the challenges that we face. In a business whose stock and trade is the free flow of ideas, intelligent debate, and rational consideration of all sides of complicated issues, I'd like us to encourage to walk the talk in negotiations. I share this with the board. I'd like to encourage the exploration of more open, transparent forums for negotiations. I'd like to broaden the base of participation in negotiations. I'd like to reconfigure the goal of negotiations from that of creating winners and losers to something which generates mutual pride both in the process and in the rational outcome. Such models exist. I would pledge my energy to work with anyone interested in such a thing. I have the greatest respect for my district colleagues and friends in SLCTA and the other employee groups, and the greatest confidence that we can develop a system of work which can be a model for others to emulate. I appreciate the board and the audience's attention to this. I appreciate so much the agreement that we have achieved with our friends from SLCTA, and look forward to moving forward to even better days in the future. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Valentine. I'm glad that you caught me as I moved along, because I couldn't agree with you more, and I appreciate that very much.
Haven't been so lucky, primarily because the issuance of pink slips is completely unrelated to the merit of the teacher receiving the layoff notice. I'm here tonight to advocate that you adopt a working merit evaluation system that can be used in case of unavoidable budget deficits in the future. My intent is not to move mountains and change deep-seated beliefs on merit pay. Rather, it is to advocate a relatively harmless system of benchmarking teachers and producing accountability in the profession. I'm sure that the district already uses some form of merit evaluation. In fact, I know that many, if not all, excellent teachers are in favor of a merit-based evaluation system if the assessment tools are adequate, particularly when it comes to student testing. This is why I advocate a method of using a class improvement average to evaluate how students are doing in terms of standardized testing. For example, assume a fourth grade class's average test scores are compared to that same fourth grade class's average test scores from third grade. If there's an improvement, then the teacher has done an adequate job. This theory assumes that outliers will be neutralized through the averaging process, while also assuming that students will maintain their same zest or lack of zest for learning from year to year. What this tries to avoid is gaps in learning fundamentals. If a class's standardized MAP test scores don't improve from the year, it's obvious where the failure has occurred. Further, when this is combined with normalized principal evaluations, education level, involvement in staff committees, parent recommendations, as well as years of experience, an all-encompassing teacher evaluation system is born. Although the egregious pink slips have not been issued in this district, San Luis Coastal is in a unique position to implement the system before it's too late. Since I'm not a teacher, I'm not able to say how you already evaluate your employees. I may be preaching to the choir. I am, however, an impartial community member, and all I want is the best education for the children. The only way this objective can be achieved is by guaranteeing parents, teachers, students, and the community that the best, most effective teachers will remain employed by the district regardless of their age and regardless of budget deficits. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Our next speaker is Matt Eves.
All right. Good evening, board members. My name is Matt Eves, and I just moved to San Luis Obispo about 8 months ago. I'm an MBA student at Cal Poly SLO, and I'm here tonight to advocate for green building in San Luis Obispo County Schools. Since I've moved here, I've been really impressed with everything San Luis Obispo has to offer, and especially with the reputation of the schools. One thing that caught my attention when looking at the websites and seeing some of the schools is that not much is mentioned about any current or future green building projects. During the time of fiscal crisis, conserving for the future and optimizing resources is critical. I'm sure you all know that. But in fact, I read today that Global Green USA is urging the public to sign a petition to urging President Obama to make green schools a priority in 2009. There's evidence of momentum gaining here in San Luis Obispo. There's a lot of businesses that are members of Slow Green Building, or Slow Green Build, which promotes green building and just as applying good practices to construction in ways that we're not doing right now. Even the executive officer of the Office of Public School Construction, Rob Cook, says that he sees a need for more outreach to make school districts aware of high-performance grant funding and the many grants available for schools who are taking these initiatives. In fact, I have a quote from him saying that if implemented properly, you have very little additional cost to invest in your facility. You have a return on your investment, and you reduce your operating costs for the life of the facility. Also, features such as daylighting and improved acoustics have great payoffs for the educational environment. In the current period of tight budgets, green schools make more sense than ever. So I'm really interested in this stuff, and my uncle's an architect, and he's done a lot of projects, green building projects, and so I'm not an expert on it, but just think that the school community can partner with more organizations to make learning environments better for kids and save money. So thank you.
Thank you very much.
The last speaker is Christine Woodward. And we'll get to...
Christine's the last one that put in a sheet to request to speak, but the...
expenditures at Pacheco Elementary to at least the average of other district elementary schools, as it currently has one of the lowest per pupil expenditures of all the elementary schools in the district. This money can help improve the bilingual program at Pacheco Elementary and can be used specifically to develop programs for English learners and further the district's goal of educating students so that they may contribute in our culturally diverse world community. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you all for your very thoughtful comments, too. It's much appreciated. And I think, Mr. Perez, did you want to speak?
Greetings. I'm Charlie Perez. I teach at Los Osos Middle School. And I wanted to come tonight. I'm so pleased that we have an agreement. But I wanted to come here to say, when I was born, I was screaming. And I screamed for 6 months, they tell me, and never stopped. And my dad spent the first 6 months of my life saying, "What the bleep is wrong with that bleeping kid?" Nobody understood me. They didn't get it at all, and I didn't understand them. And I think part of what that goes back to is I was from this completely different place. The routines I was used to were really different than the routines in this new place, and I didn't get it, and they didn't understand me. And I bring this up because it feels like every time we hit negotiations, the perspective from both sides is, what the bleep is wrong with these bleeping people? It just seems like we get into this whole head-butting thing and we feel we can't trust one another and all that muck. And I think what's up is we are from different places. It is radically different to work all day with students than not. And even though we have great, wonderful folks on the board and administration who've been in the classroom, who have wonderful imaginations, who do their very best, it's not the same. And we just have, you know, we have the same problem going the other directions, of course, with the teachers, with, you know, various decisions and the response of, what the bleep is wrong with these people? And I think somehow we need to, as a group, all of us, figure out how we can increase the reasonable communication we already are working on. I'm really thankful we had a number of board visitors and administrators at the Los Osos Middle School open house, and I know that you spend a lot of time going to other open houses and back to school nights and meetings like crazy. That really helps. Bruce has been working really hard to encourage these meet and confer meetings, which is helping. The teacher collaboration time has been hugely helpful. We see Ed pretty regularly out on campuses. I get to run into Marilyn at the hardware store and talk. John's had these informal meetings where we have a chance to kind of rub elbows. And there are, I'm sure, hundreds of other interactions I don't even know about. And that's good. But I think we really need to do better. Because if we can get to a point where we can't trust one another, we don't believe each other, we work together. We need to have trust, and we need to believe in one another. And what task is more important than this monumental one that we as a group have? So I just wanted to say, unless we want all parties involved to keep working incredibly hard for countless hours to make the best decisions they can and then be seen as bleeping idiots, I think we really need to work hard to establish some kind or a whole bunch of varied and plentiful forums to communicate. So thanks so much for being here, and keep up the good work.
Thank you, Charlie. Is there anyone else from the public that would like to address the board? Okay, seeing none, we're going to move on to reports by staff or administration. Is there anything before Mr. Miller gives the state of the budget report that the staff or administrators wish to report out to the board? Seeing none, I think we'll go directly. Russell, can you give us the status of the state budget, please?
Yeah, I'll do my best. In Sacramento right now, the big issues are the propositions that are going to be put in front of the voters next month, and the current polling numbers on those are very much against their passage, except for the one which limits the salary of legislators should they not be able to agree upon the budget. So everything is polling in the low to mid 40s and 50s, except for that one issue. The revenue numbers that are coming out after the personal income taxes have been due are not hitting the expectations. The current estimate is that the personal income tax revenues will fall short by perhaps $2 billion in their expectations. And what that will do is drive a couple of the deficit numbers further into the red. And of the changes necessary to the budget they've already adopted, that when the propositions don't pass, will leave a substantial hole in their expectations to the point where they're going to have to come back and revise their budget that they've already passed. So we'll have to wait till June.
Any further information regarding the federal stimulus money to schools?
Federal stimulus money we've applied for, should be on its way. It was an easy process to apply for. The only number that I've seen in terms of an estimate for San Luis Coastal is about $1.4 million. And what that includes is about a 50-50 split between IDEA, or special education, $700,000 for special education, and $700,000 for Title I, low socioeconomic status kids. Out of that Title I money is a small sliver of money that will be available as an enhancement to categorical programs, but in the overall picture, it's not going to be a lot of money.
Okay, thank you. Mark?
Russell, is it true what I'm hearing that the stimulus money, they're, like you're saying, 1.4, but it's actually going to be coming down in two separate chunks over 2 years?
Will be two chunks of money coming. First chunk is given to us. One of the requirements of the form that was filled out to apply for the money is there are a substantial number of reports and expectations that the feds have that we're going to have to respond to them about how we're using the money. The second hunk of the money is going to come probably based on an analysis of how we're using the first hunk of money. So we have to be very careful and considerate of what we're going to do in terms of enhancing special ed, enhancing Title I. For revenue limit districts, they're going to get the economic stabilization money. We're not going to get that piece of the money. But out of that money, they're expecting revenue limit districts to create and save jobs and contribute to the workforce with that.
Dr. Valentine.
Yeah, one of the things that we're hearing repeatedly connected with the federal stimulus dollars is an interest that those dollars be used creatively in order to create progress towards such things as closing the achievement gap, educational reform, and the like, and that the eligibility for the second installation of the dollars is going to be based upon an evaluation of how creatively the first hunk was used with respect to pushing the education agenda forward.
Okay. Thank you. Any other questions for Russell? Okay. And, Russell, did you have another comment that you're good? Okay. Thank you very much for that information. Now we're on to report by board members, and Mark is going to go. But before Mark goes, I wanted to just mention a couple of things, just preempting this for a second. Not I'm taking any of yours away. Two things that are important to me right now. I was out at the open house at C.L. Smith, and I just wanted to mention, since one of our speakers tonight talked about the Pacheco program she left and the immersion program and the EL program that we have here in the district, I walked into the EL classroom at C.L. Smith, and the classroom was absolutely full with families and their children and their students, and I was speaking with the teacher and telling her how amazing this looked and how incredible. And she was saying that 2.5-3 years ago, there were two families in that room, a total of about 7 or 8 people. And this last year, there were 35, 40 people. I know Dr. Valentine was there and some other board members were there. It was an incredible sight to see the true integration of families and their students as they begin that long process of becoming part of a different culture, and it's a very difficult process. So I think that the district and at C.L. Smith and many programs that we have done tremendous things to make families feel very welcome, to begin a new process with their students, to become part of a different culture. So that was amazing to see. The other thing I wanted to mention, and I'm doing this in all due respect to Dr. Valentine, who gave a very eloquent summation of the recent completed negotiations, I just wanted to personally thank the teachers and the members of the school district's bargaining team who stayed up, and I don't think many people may know this, till 1:30 to finish the negotiations on the evening when most agreements were reached. I think that the commitment and the interaction was an exemplary effort that night. There is one thing, though, I wanted to mention, and I don't usually do this, but Charlie, who's a friend of mine, I do disagree to a degree. I think that there are very common interests between people in this district relative to issues in negotiations especially, and that's the issues relative to the well-being and the best interests of the students. I think if everybody who is involved in San Luis Coastal sat down, they could find common interest in what would work best for the students. I think that's one then putting them into a framework that sometimes restricts discussion rather than promotes it. So I want to go on the record as saying I'm a huge supporter of interest-based bargaining when people can honestly, truly sit down when it's necessary over longer periods of time and find that common ground with what will benefit the students. And I think we all share that goal. So at this point, I hope that everyone who is involved has an opportunity to really evaluate what's taken place to possibly move forward to something that's better, that I think Mr. Perez was discussing also earlier, if I may say that. So that's my second point. Mark?
I was going to say everything John said.
Oh, did he? That's because I saw your notes.
Yeah, but first of all, I did want to thank administration and SLCTA for their hard work. I think it's paid off for everybody. Recently, I've been out of town a lot. I attended the CSBA Conference Planning Committee, and it really looks like there's going to be a tremendous conference coming up with a lot of attention paid to how school districts can do more with less, and I think it's going to be good. While I was up in Sacramento, I did get to talk to the two of the three candidates that are running for Jack O'Connell's seat, the superintendent of public instruction, and I think that that's going to be a very important decision as we continue to go through these bad economic times. It was very interesting. When I was up there, the Democrats were holding their state convention, and even the Democrats who brokered the deal came out of their convention rejecting support for 1A. CTA supports 1A. CSBA is against 1A. Mrs. Holmes in the minutes cited that I was confused about the propositions, and I have to tell you, after being in Sacramento for almost a week, I'm even more confused. But I have to say that this convoluted process that allows the legislature to put their work down on the public and in the forms of propositions just is not working, and the legislature needs to do their jobs.
Thanks, Mark. Chris?
Well, thanks. On a lighter note, I was pleased to be able to go to the Morro Bay and Los Osos Middle School open houses, and it was great to see all you guys there. It was really nice to see the parents there. Charlie teaches, it's English home ec, and probably together at the same time. But in his class, he had laid out things that I think the guys had made, right? The students had made. Yeah. And so in the English class, there were all these really good-looking suites that were going on sale. So that's really nice. I, too, was up in Sacramento at the CSBA Budget Committee this weekend. And I think one thing we have to recognize is that as difficult as we think budget is going to be this year, it's going to be much worse next year. The ballot propositions, as Mr. Miller is saying, I think are bound to fail. As Mr. Buckman talks, 1A is clearly too complicated for most people to understand, in spite of the best efforts of some of the local newspapers to portray it as sort of a simple fix to the state budget problem by creating this rainy day fund. I'm pretty confident it's going to fail, too, and that's the folks I'm talking to in Sacramento are saying that as well. So the question then is, what's Plan B going to be? And that remains to be seen. And like Mark's saying, I hope the legislators actually step up to the plate now and really do some soul searching and look at what's going to be for the good of California. One other thing I wanted to mention is, and I don't know if it was mentioned since I came in late, was that tomorrow night the school administrators are honoring some of their own at the Madonna Inn. AXA is, well, that's the organization. I think it's the Association of California School Administrators, is it not, Mark?
Yes.
And our region is going to be honoring top administrators. And the superintendent of the year is Dr. Valentine, and he'll be honored tomorrow night. And the principal of the year is Amy Shields, and she'll be honored tomorrow night. So that's really exciting for us. And I wish them congratulations.
Thanks, Chris, for mentioning that also. Catherine?
Thank you. I would like to echo my fellow board members' appreciation to everyone involved in the negotiation process with the teachers, and look forward to moving ahead with a very collegial relationship and a professional one. And so thank you for everyone's efforts on both sides of the table. I'd like to say that we have a woman of distinction among us. Our own Dr. Mary Matakovich was honored by Cuesta College as one of their annual women. So I appreciated being able to visit both schools. And that is all. Thank you.
Thank you, Catherine. Phil?
Again, congratulations to the negotiating team for hashing out a workable solution to our ongoing negotiations. That's tough. Again, on the lighter note, I got to visit C.L. Smith's open house and Pacific Beach's open house earlier this month. It's been a long time since we had a board meeting. Wow. Great things going on at both schools. I'm very impressed with the AVID program that is at C.L. Smith. The digital technology also available at C.L. Smith, and of course the DLAC meeting. That was great to see all those families. And one other comment. Pacheco, Catherine and Walt and Dr. Valentine and I got to visit Pacheco, where they opened up a solar energy panel. Thank you. And it's great to thank you to PG&E for partnering with our district on that. Thank you.
Thanks, Phil. Any other board reports? Okay. We can move into action discussion, and I believe Dr. Matakovich regarding the study session for the drug and alcohol issue.
Thank you. Over the course of the year, staff has addressed the board on several occasions with board agenda items, one in May and one in October, about our California Healthy Kids Survey results. As well, in September, we discussed drug use deterrence. Subsequently, you as a board convened a subcommittee made up of Dr. Eisendrath Rogers, Mr. Buckman, Mr. Spadafore, who helped to focus the board's discussion, and the request was made of the staff to provide background information to assist you in the planning of a study session around drug and alcohol teen use. Staff is present tonight to participate in this discussion. I'd like to introduce Dana Francis, counselor at Sinsheimer School, Jim Fager and Shelley Benson, counselors at San Luis Obispo High School. Anybody? To the group, great. As well, Terry Elfrink, assistant principal, Los Osos Middle School, Kathy Bueller-Lipsy, dean at San Luis Obispo High School, and Pete Sotovich, principal, Morro Bay High School. I want to thank the staff for coming tonight to participate in this discussion at your request. We prepared the item with the following information, and you have a pretty extensive package. You have the relevant board policies in your packet that address issues relative to drug and alcohol. You also have a copy of our district student conduct code, which is part of the annual notification of information to parents, which are read and signed off by every parent and student upon school registration. You also have a protocol that's divided into three stages. We have a prevention piece involving all students in our instructional program, in activities, in asset development, in counseling, in our student assistance program, and we also provide parent ed opportunities in the prevention phase. In the at-risk identification phase, this narrows our response to those students who display a need for support because of their attendance behavior record, their academic difficulties possibly, or a referral, which engages the teacher, a coach, the student success team, a counselor, and or an administrator on an individual basis. We also then have the post-identification or intervention phase, which determines the extent to which a student's needs need to be met via an individual conference, a referral to a community resource, a discipline consequence, to name just a few. If you have questions about these three phases, you'll be able to query the staff in terms of their involvement with our students and their parents on a day-in and day-out basis. We also have interventions that are available to our students and parents. They come in the shape of student-parent conferences and behavioral contracts, counseling, and also the possibility of the attendance review board. There are disciplinary actions also that are included, but our interventions are extensive, engaged with our teachers and with our staff. Our staff is very available to our parents on an individual basis and are very willing to meet at any time. Parents also take parenting classes that are available through our adult education program, And we have a number of school advisory committees that are available. And again, along with the connection to our school attendance review board in the event that they need to take that step. You asked for a listing of the programs that are available throughout the county. We had our secondary administrators interview the staffs in the outlying districts, and you have a summary of what's available throughout our county. And if we might say, there are some districts with no specific programs involved. Some districts have counselors who run drug and alcohol prevention groups. There's a district that provides a full-time district at-risk coordinator. There's a high school with a full-time registered addiction specialist. There are districts that have a formal district behavioral contract that is put in place when students are involved in drugs or alcohol. There is also a district with mandatory after-school classes for students under suspended expulsions. And there's a district with random drug testing. So the districts around us have a variety of programs, but most importantly, these schools offer resources to us and to our staff. And what our goal is develop our programs based on research. And as you know from the presentation made by Dana Francis, and Ian Trejo and Martin Infick in the past, we look for programs that involve school curriculum, parent-student involvement, and that there's a component of communication as well as a close connection to our community. We continue to develop strategies to work with our families. It is our goal to realize the mission of our school district, to educate our students to become self-sufficient individuals. The district guarantees to provide the highest quality programs and services, which will give all individuals the opportunity to realize their full intellectual, physical, creative, emotional, and social potential. That's our mission, and we take it seriously. Our strategic plan has formally addressed the at-risk students with ongoing, continued support, especially in the form of our professional counselors. Those counselors and our teachers work day in and day out to make a difference with our students. And based on the conversation that you want to involve, I'm sure that our counselors will be able to share their involvement with families and how they make a difference. We think we are making a difference by a coordinated support program, and we want to thank you for supporting us through the strategic plan and for our ability to be able to provide that support. We're now open to participate in a discussion with you. You have our information available to you, and I open the conversation.
Thank you very much, Dr. Matakovich. I think maybe a little background from the board and then the rest of the board members can contribute to this might help with the discussion tonight also. The tremendous work that our staff does with students who are dealing with issues regarding substance abuse and its impact on not only achievement but also behavioral issues is, I know, a constant issue, and we have a tremendous amount of number of people who do very, very, very good work. The concern, not the concern, but the direction of the board was to find out what is it that's working, what's not working, what is the plus or minus with parent involvement, with community involvement, what resources are we using, where could we develop more resources, where could we redirect our resources, and where could we change some of our resources as an overview. Mark and Catherine brought up this issue about how damaging substance abuse was with student achievement, that we look at test results, but before the test results come in, we know that there are signs and symptoms of students struggling because of substance abuse to both be in class and to reach their potential when they're in class. So the idea of the board, and the rest of the board can fill this in, was to look at what there is, what's working, what's not working, what can be redirected, what other resources, may be developed, what the parent involvement has been, what's positive about that, what's negative about that, what can we, through education with parents, change in terms of their assistance to their children in becoming better students, being administration when the staff is ready to discuss this as an overview, as an ability to discuss those things that I mentioned, and to really see, are there other ways? Are there more effective ways? Are there ways with the community, with parents, that will move our goal forward to close the achievement gap for those students, in this case, that are struggling with substance abuse? Mark?
First of all, before we go much further, I think it's important to recognize the guy in the side conversation over there. I think we should congratulate Pete on his Distinguished School Award. So before I go any further, I just wanted to do that. I think what staff has given us is a great start. There's a great deal of information here. It's only raised a few questions for me. Those are all the yellow, the blue stickers. I'm looking forward to going on to this study session. There are many things that I thought I had questions on that were answered with this material, but there's also many questions that have been developed for me. So I'd like to see us schedule the study session as soon as possible.
Okay. Catherine?
Since we brought these people here tonight, I was wondering if we might be able to hear from a couple of you about the research that you've done within the county. To see if there was anything that surprised you that you think would be most beneficial for us to look at first that's being done differently in maybe another school district or another school. Show of hands. I'd like to, in particular, perhaps hear from Julie about Templeton Unified School District. Would you mind sharing?
I'm Kathy.
Kathy, if that's that'll help you. Thank you.
I'm sorry, I'm Kathy Bueller, and I did not interview Templeton Middle School, so I don't know that I can comment on that. I don't think that, I mean, just having read through this, and I didn't speak with any schools directly, but I have worked for Atascadero Unified for 14 years prior to returning to San Luis Coastal, and am familiar with a lot of the services that are available at other districts. And I think that what we provide here is very comparable, and in a lot of ways there are more services here in our district. So I think we're doing a good job. I think it would be worthwhile taking a look at that. And I think, I don't know if it was Mr. Buckman or Mr. Spadafore, but one of you said, you know, looking at what actually is working and what types of things we need to maybe change to see if we can be successful. I do know that at San Luis Obispo High School, we have very few, if we do have a drug or alcohol referral or offense at our site, it's rare that we have a second offense. So they're going through programs. We're doing outreach with parents. We're referring them to services. We're working with Mrs. Musgrave, who is our family advocate, and getting services for students and families and getting them connected with the community. So I think once it's identified, whether it be student self-referral, parent referral, or something that has come forth in a disciplinary consequence, we're doing what we can, and it appears to be pretty effective.
Thanks, Kathy. Any other comments by board members? Chris?
Yeah, I think the one thing that really struck me about this large packet of information was there's a lot there, and I have an interest in knowing how do we come together to coordinate those services, and I don't know if we can actually think about what works, what doesn't work, but more what's good for this kid, what's not good for this kid. How do we actually get to the place where we say this is a good program for this child? And so I'd be really interested in looking at that. And then and the only way I could write it was, how can we bring it all together or is that necessary to do mm-hmm. so that that kind of after coordination can occur, or before?
Mm-hmm.
So those were that's really just jumped out at me. There's so much there.
Mm-hmm.
How do we bring a sense to it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Kathy.
One of the things that I think at San Luis Obispo High School that we do a really good job with is we have two deans, and we have our students split by last names, and our counseling staff is also split by last names. So basically, we are paired up with a counselor, and our counselors meet pretty much every
intervene are changed dramatically. There's not that many opportunities. So to me, the idea of having a study session was to review what it is we do, to find out if, as I had said earlier, there's a better way, some redirecting of resources, some new resources, with the idea of just discussing this issue in a setting of a study session so we could look at all aspects and just see where we can go, if there is another direction, if there are some ideas. So the board felt that the time, unfortunately, that the staff puts in to structure this is, although time-consuming, that the board felt there was value mm-hmm. to really looking at everything once again to see where this is at this point in time, at a stage where we can maybe have more effect on the students that are struggling with these issues in the classroom. Okay, thank you. Catherine, then Chris. Thanks, Mark.
Thanks. I now realize that the names attached to these subjects are not necessarily the people who are here tonight. So there's a lot of great information in here that we can definitely use in the study session. But two things that leapt out for me. One is asking the question, when we get back the Healthy Kids Survey, it's broken down into grades 5 and then grades 7 and 9. And one question would be, are we starting early enough? I saw the curriculum. But are we starting early enough with exposing children, third grade, fourth grade? Are some of the curricula that are being offered at some of the other districts throughout the country, the model districts, my impression is that they start very early. And it's because I suppose it's a comment on our whole society and how kids are exposed to these things at a much earlier age than we are accustomed to. So one thing for us to look at perhaps in the study session is, are we starting early enough with teaching kids to say no? That would be one thing. And the other is being proactive in finding kids who aren't necessarily the kids who are in trouble yet, but who are on a path toward trouble. And I think that's why the coaches came to us with this problem. They brought it to our attention in the first place. I think they felt a little disenfranchised in a sense because they were dealing with kids. They were seeing their problems after school. They were not prepared to do something themselves, and they were hoping we could do something for them. Maybe there's another model that we need to look at about how to make the teachers and the coaches and everyone else who's involved in the kids' lives feel as though they're part of the solution and figure out together what that solution is and then how we can bring the families into it and let them be a part of the solution. But helping to identify the problems with the kids and the families and then how to turn them on to the community resources that you've identified for us, which are numerous and useful and great. So I'd love to see an opportunity in a study session for us to bring all of those shareholders together, the teachers, the counselors, some of the providers of these services in the community, the coaches, in sort of a roundtable discussion about how can we improve our proactive response to the effect of drug use and alcohol use on the achievement gap.
Thank you, Catherine. Chris?
Yeah, I think the one other thing that we had talked about and that sort of bubbled up during the initial discussions we had was the recognition that this is not just a school problem or this is not just a school issue, and what can we as a school district do, or what can we as part of the community do to get together as a community to look at this as a serious issue? So not looking at it in a vacuum, I think, is one of the driving issues, and that was one of the driving issues for me when we had this initial discussion.
Thank you, Chris. Any other comments, Mark?
In reviewing the material, and again, it's wonderful, and I may be incorrect, but one of the things that comes out or stood out for me is we have good programs, we have good people, but is there an evaluation process in place so that we can track and we say we have this program, how well does this program do? So over 1 or 2 or 3 years, are we seeing a decrease or an increase? And so maybe during the study session we can start to address that issue as well.
Thank you. Phil?
Looking at the number of interventions we are doing, how successful are our interventions with students, not just at the high school or both high schools, but at the middle schools, at the elementary levels? What are we doing to intervene? And then I know there are a lot of programs through ASB and CATA that talk about school climate or work with school climate to promote a positive school culture and climate all overall. So do we have enough of those programs in place? And my sense from talking to both the principals is we do. We just need to enhance them a little bit more.
Come from schools that engage kids in positive and wholesome kinds of lifestyles and activities, and the sort of collateral byproduct of that is also going to be a decrease in drug abuse. The immensity of the forces that we are pushing against have to impress us, and I think Chris is right on that the involvement of our community is as certainly we're not burying our heads in the sand and believing that there are no drugs used or exchanged on public school campuses, but I think the vast majority of the drugs that are bought and consumed are bought and consumed in places other than public schools. In fact, public schools are one of the few places where people are actually hired to keep a lookout for that kind of thing and armed with interventions, both disciplinary and rehabilitative. And still the problem continues. And as Chris pointed out, until the society gets behind this message with respect to its children and gets behind the kinds of programs that steer children away from drugs, this problem is going to persist. I think also that there's a kind of benign perception regarding drinking and maybe to a lesser extent drugs that somehow these are kind of private, victimless crimes that involve personal choice, and it's difficult for schools to sort of invade that particular zone. But when we recognize the kind of human toll that the whole drug trade is taking on the world, the thousands of people killed in order to make sure that our children have sufficient drugs to satisfy their needs and that their parents have sufficient drugs to satisfy their needs, I think is a message that that is worth promoting. These are not harmless events in the world today. These are catastrophically violent forces in our society.
What a important point.
Could I add, John?
Yeah, Chris.
I think you're absolutely right, Ed. I think it's interesting that what have there been about 50 deaths in Mexico because of the swine flu, and I believe they're on track to have 5,000 people killed in drug wars last year.
149 deaths from the swine flu.
149 versus over 5,000 killed in the drug wars. That's pretty appalling, actually.
Yeah. And I think that the board, when looking at this, recognized how hard staff has worked with students who have issues with drug and alcohol abuse. And we see so few at the end of a process where they may be facing expulsion. And we review several years of intervention and the hard work that goes in to trying to change that process, and respect so much the work that the staff does with the students. I think this is more an effort to find ways to help, to support, to just discuss the entire program. So A, the students know think this is a very critical issue, and that B, everyone who's involved in helping students through these issues knows that they're supported fully. So we're hoping that that's what the study session will address also in bringing everybody together to look at a way forward from a point where it's being done well, but there may be other ideas that we can identify.
Mary Jo Devitt, San Luis Obispo. Since I spoke to you earlier in January regarding my view of whether or not we have a problem, I'm certainly not going to revisit that. But I wanted to share a story with you that I experienced in January at a basketball game. It was a rec game, but it was sixth and seventh grade boys. And believe it or not, I mean, I stay pretty quiet at these things. I don't chime in there. So I was sitting there, and I knew all of the parents that were there. And so one of the mothers said that her son, a sixth grader, is having his braces put on next week. So then this other gal chimes in and says, oh, you know, so-and-so, be sure you get some medication from this boy's father, who happens to be a physician, because, you know, you don't want him to be uncomfortable when he gets his braces. And, you know, I came back to the year that Dr. Matakovich brought a very, very good motivational speaker to the high school to speak to the parents. And the gym was actually packed. It was great. And he asked a question. He said, what is the most abused drug? And, of course, you know, it's alcohol and tobacco and stuff. Painkillers. Aspirin. Painkiller. And I thought of that. And I thought we just, and like you were saying about getting at a younger age, and you were saying about how, you know, it's beyond the school or encompassing more than the school, and it truly is. And I think every single person that was sitting there at that game with me loves their children, wants to do what's best for their children, highly educated parents, professional people, they want to do what's best. But we are certainly not going to let a 12-year-old be uncomfortable at the orthodontist's office. So with all good intention, that child showed up on Tuesday morning medicated because it might hurt, because it did hurt. I mean, I didn't have any medication. I had to have braces without medication. Oh, my goodness. But I think that what the problem is, my concern is not those that are having achievement gap, but those that are there, that, you know, how are we preparing them for life, and what are we doing, and how many kids are having a drink or a this or a that to kind of just relax or take it easy or whatever, that are A students. So with that, I want to thank you very much for bringing this to a study session. I think it's going to be very interesting, and I know it's going to be productive. Thank you.
Thanks, Mary Jo. Any other comments or questions from the board, staff, public? Dana?
If I'm being a good listener, all of you are getting very specific questions that will then come back and be able to address.
Okay.
Just, Mr. Buckman, with all due respect, I know we don't want to make global statements that the data doesn't show any change or it's all better or it's all worse, but there are statistics. You know, the binge drinking has to... How do you say that? Statistically significant, moving in the right direction. But there are areas of the alcohol issue that haven't changed, and there are some that have. We do have improvement, but I'll save it for the board session.
Thank you, Dana.
You're welcome.
You're welcome. Any other questions, comments? I would suggest, if the board is ready, that we ask staff to move this to a date certain. At a time when all the powers that be can come together for the study session. Is that fine?
Yes.
Is that how the board wants to see this go?
I see that.
Okay, I think we're good with that. Okay, thank you very much, and thank you, Kim. Okay. Thank you, Kim. Would anybody like to make a motion to move this to a date certain as a study session item?
Yeah, I'd like to make a motion that we move this to a date certain, and that we include as many or people from the community as well as from within the district.
Okay. Do we have a second? Okay. Chris?
Yes, I'll go
Okay, second by Catherine, a motion by Mark to have this move to a date certain. Any discussion? Seeing none, all in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Passes 4-0. Thank you, and thank you for everyone from the staff who came tonight to help us with this. And I know we're going to have a productive session. Thank you. The next item is the self-evaluation planning, and I'd like to make a motion to use my seat as the president for one night. It's gone to my head already. I can feel the power surging through this seat. That we schedule the self-evaluation for June 7th, a Sunday, beginning at 2 p.m., and that if Wendy, who's provided facilitation in the past, is available, that we ask her to facilitate again, and that instead of having a square or a rectangular table, we have a round table, so there are no corners of influence created by those 90-degree angles, but only a round and a direct view for everybody across the table. So that's my motion.
Okay. Second that.
My motion, seconded by Catherine. Any discussion? Seeing none, all in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Passes 4-0. Next we go to the action consent, and I'll read these, and if anyone would like an item pulled, please indicate that. Number 6, approval of certificated and classified personnel. 7, acceptance of donations. 8, disposition of surplus property. 9, approval of furniture equipment request. 10, approval of purchase orders. 11, approval of international student exchange programs. 12, approval of additional new and modified secondary courses for 2009-2010. 13, approval of 2009-2010 Carl Perkins Career Technical Education funding application. 14, action on claim against the district, James R. Minnis. Seeing that none have been pulled, I would make a motion that items 6 through 14 be passed.
I'll second.
Second by Mark. Any discussion on any of those? Hearing none, all in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Passes 4-0. Now we have the advance agenda, which we've discussed in part. Are there any other items the board members wish to pull or discuss? Catherine? I can see you moving for that mic.
Just fumbling with the mic. I'd like to ask that we move forward on the IM that's been occupying that space for quite some time. That is worded, how to close the achievement gap while maintaining support for advanced learners. Don't remember what the protocol is for whether that has to be seconded to move it forward.
I think when we're looking, this is an agenda item.
Mm-hmm.
To be brought onto an agenda to be discussed. So we have already had two board members. Then we have to have a majority vote of the board when a board member requested it move forward to the actual agenda. So I guess we have to have 3 out of 4 members tonight move that to an agenda item. Is that the correct reading? Oh, really? So all 4 tonight? Okay. Oh, sorry, Chris. Super delegate over there. Okay, so if that's the correct reading, then there's...
My sense is that this is already on the advanced agenda, and it's really just a request to bring it forward, you know, in the near and future. Am I reading this right?
In our lifetime.
Yeah, in our lifetime.
Okay. So thank you, Dr. Valentine. So we have a motion, and is there a second tonight to bring it forward to a time on the agenda in the future? Okay, we have a second by Chris. Any discussion? Seeing none, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Passes 4-0. It therefore moves to the next stage. Thank you, Kim, for that. Is there a motion or a sentiment of anyone here tonight except Russell to actually adjourn?
We do have.
Go ahead.
We do have a clarification for the advanced agenda, Ms. Holmes.
Okay, thank you.
I alerted you during advanced agenda at the last meeting, and completely slipped through my fingers when I was preparing this agenda. that the board needs to submit a new ballot regarding the CSBA delegate because there was a tie vote.
Can we do that tonight without it being on the agenda?
This is my proposal because their instructions don't specify that you technically need a board action. So since there was a unanimous vote last time for Tammy Gunther, I'm suggesting that you give me that same direction and we'll submit this ballot with Dr. Valentine's signature and we'll present a formal item on your agenda on May 12th to ratify that action just to make sure we've dotted our I's.
Okay, that makes sense. And then I guess what we could ask the board here tonight, is there any board member that wishes to amend that original motion to have it come back as an agenda item to be rediscussed? Are they happy with moving forward on that past vote?
Yes.
I think we're okay. Thank you, Kim, for doing that very much.
Phil.
I'd like to see if we could, at some time later in the future, discuss how combination classes are fit into our strategic plan, if possible.
I'll second that.
Thank you.
So that moves it to a potential agenda item to be listed down the road. Okay, thank you.
I want to just throw money at something that's not effective.
I agree with you. Okay. Any other advanced agenda items or ideas for advanced agenda items? Or any interesting fishing stories? Okay, seeing none. I think that we can adjourn. Oh, Mark?
I'd like to make a Walt Millar memorial motion for adjournment.
Okay. We're adjourned. Is his demise...